Geek Radio Daily for not Monday. Sorry, I feel every week. It just feels so good to say that. It's so fantastic, and it's just that much closer to the inevitable weekend. It's just how it works. Welcome to
and
the...
And I'm here with you today.
Aw, that's so sweet. Welcome to the 18th of February. We are the fine folks from GeekRadioDaily.com. You know us from Facebook and Twitter and all those fine, fantastic places. The folks bringing to you today, well, the lady that just at this point in the week can't deal with folks, that is the Flinstress.
You go, girl.
Yes, I will depart, lest your bad grammar rub off on me.
Oh, snap.
It's only Tuesday, yo.
That's right, and you're here. That's so strange. When you told me that, I just didn't know how to react. I'm the wonderful Billy Flynn.
That's a twist. That's very twisty. Twisty.
What happened on this fine, fantastic day, yo?
Well, let's take it back to 1885. The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain is published in the USA.
1908, Thomas Edison has issued a patent for an improvement to the alkaline storage battery.
1913, English chemist Frederick Soddy introduces the term isotope to describe atoms of the same element that have different atomic masses.
1929, the first Academy Awards are announced. Nominees for Outstanding Picture are the film Seventh Heaven, The Racket, and Wings. Wings won because people love Tim Daly.
In 1930, Clyde Tombaugh discovers the planet Pluto, which was a planet and then not a planet, becoming the only American astronomer to find a planet inside of the solar system. And then they took it away.
Took it away from him. 1946, television signals are first successfully transmitted from Washington, D.C. to New York City over an AT&T coaxial cable.
Wow. 1953, the first 3D feature film, Buona Devil, directed by Arch Obler and starring Robert Stack, Barbara Britton, and Nigel Bruce, premieres at Lowe's State Theater in New York City. The film's tagline is, "The miracle of the age, a lion in your lap, a lover in your arms." The film was produced on a budget of $400,000.
Wow, that's a lot. 1954, the first Church of Scientology is established in Los Angeles, California.
In 1963, the first National Medal of Science is awarded by U.S. President John F. Kennedy to Theodore von Karman for his work at the Caltech Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
1977, the first Computer Shack franchise opens in Morristown, New Jersey.
Wow. Same year, the first space shuttle orbiter, the Enterprise, embarks on its maiden flight in captive mode, attached to the top of a Boeing 747 jumbo jet. The flight is the first of five captive flights before the orbiter is finally released to land on its own.
1979, snow falls in the Sahara Desert in southern Algeria during a storm which lasts about half an hour. It's the first and last time it snowed there in recorded history, unless I slept through it.
And still no snow in Richmond, Virginia.
Nope.
In 1997, a Buddhist temple in Hiroshima, Japan announces plans to open a virtual graveyard on the internet, on which the deceased can be represented by government records, photos, and virtual gravestones.
1999, Abdul Treya, age 16, of Calgary, Canada, receives a threatening letter from the legal representation of Apple Computer, Fenwick & West, LLP. The letter demands that the teenager turn over his internet domain, appleimac.com,
without making any offer of
compensation. The threat makes the news when Reuters reports the story and subsequently draws an enormous amount of media coverage. In April, they'll settle out of court where Apple will pay his legal fees and an additional token payment in exchange for the domain.
In 2000, Universal Studios releases the science fiction film Pitch Black, directed by David Tui and starring Vin Diesel.
This started the whole thing. 2005, the 42nd known Mersenne prime number M25964951, which can be expressed as 225964951-1, is discovered by Martin Nowak of Germany as a part of the Great Internet Mersenne Prime Search.
You could figure out the acronym.
Distributed Computing Project. The number consists of nearly 8 million digits. Bring out the Mersenne!
Same year, Warner Brothers releases the film Constantine, directed by Francis Lawrence, starring Keanu Reeves, love him, not so much in this role, Rachel Weisz, and Tilda Swinton.
He was so horribly miscast for that. Birthdays?
Malice Zhao is 29 from the Shannara Chronicles and Iris on The Flash.
Chelsea Hobbs is 35, the Snow Queen, and Make It or Break It.
Ike Barinholtz is 43 from Mad TV, The Mindy Project, and Suicide Squad.
Matt Dillon is 56 from The Outsiders, Something About Mary, My Bodyguard, Wild Things, To Die For.
Tony Anselmo is 60, since 1985, voice of Donald Duck.
Jane Atkinson is 61 from Criminal Minds and House of Cards.
John Travolta is 66 from Carrie, Welcome Back, Kotter, Pulp Fiction, The Experts, and Battlefield Earth.
One wipe every scene change. Sybil Shepherd is 70 from The Last Picture Show, Moonlighting.
No Longer With Us, born in 1919, Jack Palance, Hawk the Slayer, Batman, City Slickers, Tango and Cash.
1922, Alan Melvin from Archie Bunker's Place, Sergeant Bilko, and the voice of Megilla Gorilla.
Born in 1925, George Kennedy from Flight of the Phoenix, Cool Hand Luke, and Naked Gun.
1932, Milos Forman gave us The Fireman's Ball, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Amadeus, Amadeus, Amadeus.
Well, on CBS Tonight, we have a new NCIS and FBI and FBI Most Wanted.
ABC, it's new stuff with Mixed, The Connors, Bless This Mess, Mixed-ish, Black-ish, all kinds of tensions escalate between Aaron and his team when he counsels a white supremacist to repay his debt to an inmate on a new For Life.
On NBC, girls just want to have put in on a new Ellen's Game of Games. And This Is Us, and Iggy goes against standards to prove a diagnosis on a new Amsterdam.
A new Amsterdam. That's right. Fox hits a rerun of The Resident. Gordon Ramsay's 24 Hours to Hell and Back, not in Richmond this week.
Nope. On the CW, we get The Flash, and then Constantine finally confronts somebody from his past with Charlie's help, which leads him on a journey through his past on a Legends of Tomorrow.
Which means they're finally wrapping up his storyline from his TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fantastic. Freeform, The Twilligit Saga, New Moon.
AMC has El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie.
FX, Star Trek, Into Darkness. It's a good movie. I don't want to hear it.
Okay. On FXX, The Simpsons Marathon, we get Hello Gutter, Hello Fodder, and Eight Misbehavin', and Take My Wife, Sleaze.
IFC will be showing Watchmen. I'm not sure if it's the complete director's cut. If so, with commercials, it'll take about 4.5 hours.
Right. On BBC America, we get Mission Impossible.
But it's the whole movie. Sci-Fi Channel, Point Break on the Sci-Fi Channel. Because it's laser surfing or something. I don't know, dude.
Sure. On TBS, Prince Chauncey manages to secure an internship, and he learns some new skills on a new miracle worker.
But tonight we're watching the Lifetime Movie Network, because after secrets regarding a brutal murder-suicide in a small Vermont town surface, local citizens are forced to rethink their personal relationship with neighbors and others. Having confided in her pastor, a murder victim's secrets come to light. John Stamos and Anna Gunn star in The Secrets of Eden.
The wonderful Billy Flynn looks at what Chad and Abby are up to now. If you know what TV show they're on this week, you could win yourself a prize. It's your Further Adventures of Chad and Abby update. Stefan, Gabby, and Kate plan a scheme to prove that Chad is not related to Stefano. To prove this, they drug Chad and steal half a gallon of his blood to use for some DNA testing. Considering that's like one-third of his supply, he's gonna eat a bunch of cookies afterwards. Turns out that plan was all for naught, because the blood test proves Chad is actually Stefano's son. They should have trusted Stefano to know what he was talking about. You can believe in Chad. Certain guys can be believed, like Samuel Clemens or Deep Throat. Anybody on Thunder Road, hashtag Chabby. Forever.
Okay, let's read a couple of letters here.
Why not? Hey, my geeps. I am almost 100% certain Chad and Abby are traveling their way through The Riches with Eddie Izzard and Minnie Driver. If not, and if you didn't see the show, I highly recommend it. That's from Jared in Anaheim. Jared, that is a great show, but that's not where Chad and Abby are this
particular week.
But I like the way you're thinking. We also have, are Chad and Abby... That's from Jason. Well, Jason, the beep might have given it away, but you are absolutely right. So congratulations on being the first correct guest this week. Gosh, that's after just the first day. Very well done. I'm not sure how you did that, but that's awesome. If you want to jump in on this and try to win as well, by all means, drop us a note, won't you please? It's podcast@geekradiodaily.com, or just tell us anything in the world that's going on with you, and leave it in a voicemail by dialing
510-GRD-CREW.
The Riches was a very enjoyable time.
50 years ago, Mira, humankind's last hope to find new resources, departed the solar system. 7 years into her mission, she disappeared. She has returned. SNR Black, a Sol Federation Marine Corps vessel, is sent to retrieve her from certain destruction in the Kuiper Belt beyond Pluto. What they find will change humankind forever. From Parsec Award-winning author Paul E. Cooley, Derelict, Marines, Part 1 of the Derelict Saga, combines military sci-fi, space opera, mystery, and suspense to create a journey you won't forget. Podcast available at shadowpublications.com. Paperback and ebook available from amazon.com. Some mysteries shouldn't be solved.
Hi, this is Corin Nimick from Parker Lewis Can't Lose, and you're listening to Geek Radio Daily.
Indeed you are. One day we'll see you. We'll find you again, sir. We'll do that sequel. I promise you we'll do that sequel. It'll be beautiful.
Sir.
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, of course you do. What's out there today, yo?
Well, in re-release, we get Grave of the Fireflies.
God, that is such
Transylvania 6-5000 and Hudson Hawk.
In our regular movies department, we've got Snatchers.
Frankie.
Nighthawks, which has to be a remake of the Sylvester Stallone Billy Dee Williams classic. What else could it be?
I don't know. First Love.
Universal Law of Attraction. But if we're getting anything, it's going to be the story of Sam, who discovers his friends are taking him on a zombie survival paintball weekend for his stag party.
Oh, fun. And
he couldn't be. I mean, it's what a better way to spend with your last few days of freedom than shooting paintballs in the woods with your buddies. But their fantasy weekend quickly goes foobar when disaster strikes on the first day, leaving the stag party besieged and holed up in a disused nuclear bunker. Is it still just a game? Or is it actually game over, man? Mark Heap, Sean Very, Danny Carane, and a movie in the UK that's known as FUBAR, but is here as simply Killer Weekend.
I'm not wearing any pants. Film at 11.
Geek News.
Take a look at the world from a geeky point of view. Alex Houston Fisher and Eleanor Wilson sci-fi comedy Save Yourselves premiered at Sundance earlier this year and now has been picked up by Bleecker Street, which has taken global distribution, and they're currently planning a theatrical release for this coming summer.
Bleecker Street? A division of Bunsen Honeydew Productions?
Very close. The film follows a hip Brooklyn couple who, like many of their friends, find themselves dependent on technology and unable to put down their phones. So it's Black Mirror. Finding their mindless scrolling may impact their connection with each other. They take the chance to head out to an isolated cabin in the woods, vowing to unplug from the outside world for a week.
Hopefully they're not in the cabin in the woods.
Right. Sheltered from text and push notifications, they are completely unaware that aliens attack the Earth. As strange events unfold, the couple must figure out a way back to civilization, or what's left of it. I mean, I'm sure they could find a Waffle House, but with aliens involved, stay away from the eggs.
The IRS has removed tax guidelines from its website that would have asked taxpayers to report Fortnite's in-game currency on their tax reports.
You know, if they tax Mario coins, I'm ruined.
Right? The policy initially went up in October 2018 and would have been the first time that the agency would have actually ruled on video game in-game currency that's purchased with real money.
Wait, you buy in-game currency, have to report that as income?
The IRS chief counsel Michael Desmond later told reporters that the inclusion of the video game currency had been a mistake. It was corrected, and that was done quickly, as soon as it was brought to our attention, Desmond asked.
What's the tax rate on those EA loot boxes?
Well, the official statement from the IRS says, the IRS recognizes that the language on our page potentially caused concern for some taxpayers. We've changed the language in order to lessen any confusion. Transaction virtual currencies are part of a game that do not leave the game environment, like virtual currencies that are not convertible, would not require a taxpayer to indicate this on their tax return. I think somebody probably, like, snuck it in there to see if they would notice.
My coins and Words with Friends is also going to put me in a bind.
Oh, yeah. Well, despite the statements by the agency and Desmond, experts still believe that the IRS definition of virtual currency would still include video game currency.
But again, if you buy the currency, how can that be
right.
taxable?
Yeah. The definition of virtual currency in IRS guidance would still encompass these, said Jerry Brito, executive director at the Coin Center, a virtual currency think tank. I don't think they've realized the consequences of their 1040 question. The IRS needs to be very specific here. Millions of people play Fortnite, and if virtual currency is taxable, well, stop buying it and tell the IRS that V-Bucks don't grow on trees.
Now in video game stuff that is actually valuable news, one of gaming's most sought-out items, a thing of legend, turns out not only to be real, but is up for auction.
Ooh, the Phantom, the Ovation, the Xenix.
A Nintendo PlayStation prototype of the doomed collaboration between Nintendo and Sony has reached $350,000 as deep-pocketed collectors put up ever-increasing amounts of money in hopes of owning this rare device.
I'm still saving up my money for the Soldier Game console.
The Super Nintendo Entertainment System paired with a CD-ROM drive manufactured by Sony, currently being auctioned by Heritage Auctions, a live auction house specializing in popular culture items. The auction closes March 6th. The Nintendo PlayStation will become the most expensive single piece of gaming memorabilia ever sold, eclipsing the $100,150 price paid for a sealed first printing of Super Mario Brothers last year.
Do they accept those, you know, aforementioned V-Bucks? The IRS wants to.
Since Heritage charges a 20% buyer's premium on all items, that means if the auction were to go no higher, the winning bid would actually be paying $420,000 to own the device.
$420,000? Where my friends at?
One of the bidders has come forward publicly. Palmer Luckey, the head of VR company Oculus, now the founder of military technology contractor Endural, he said on Twitter he wants the PlayStation as part of a quest to digitize and preserve the history of physical video games, and that he planned to preserve the machine in the most advanced video game storage facility ever constructed.
His mom's basement?
But didn't elaborate beyond that or reveal details of the facility at all.
It's secretly a weapon, isn't it?
I would bet on it. While the PlayStation prototype is getting most of the attention from the gaming world, other items on there, up until March 6th, are out there with some crazy prices too. Other things like a sealed copy of Stadium Events for the NES at $35,000, a sealed copy of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out for $10,000, and a sealed copy of Chrono Trigger for $4,300, Ponting for all you listening. Everyone who bids, though, they do get a free copy of E.T. for the Atari 2600 and a DVD of Vampire Suck.
Burn. Well, you know, we all get robocalls. They never stop coming. Sure, there's a do not call list, but we know that's pretty much nonsense. Most of us just simply hang up on robocalls or just don't answer the phone.
I used to slam the phone down, but now you can only push the button so hard.
Right. Well, there's now a way to get back at the companies to torment you with endless robocalls that ask you for your information and try to sell you stuff. The solution is called Robo Revenge, a service that lets you sue the unwanted caller for up to $3,000 a call.
My parents would be billionaires.
Robo Revenge is the latest service offered by Do Not Pay, a robot lawyer app that lets consumers do things like appeal parking tickets, cancel services or subscriptions, or schedule appointments at government offices, among others. Huh, interesting. Joshua Browder, Do Not Pay's founder and CEO, says that big companies have failed to protect consumers from robocalls. This means that they have to take measures for themselves. Consumers have to protect themselves. The only way the problem will end is if robocallers start losing money every time they call someone.
Yeah, I can pretend my time is valuable.
The service is now available through Do Not Pay's app or their website, and this is how it works. First, it automatically adds you to the Do Not Call Registry, a list managed by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, that aims to prevent people from receiving unwanted calls. Then it gives you a virtual Do Not Pay burner credit card issued in Do Not Pay's name to provide when you receive a robocall. Then they use this transaction information to get the robocall's contact information and guides you through the process to sue them.
Can I say that I'm a little sad Robo Revenge is not the name of the Chopping Mall sequel?
Browder states that lawyers have been making millions suing robocallers. The CEO maintains that this isn't true for the average person who doesn't understand the law and doesn't know who is calling them. Nonetheless, Browder says that with Robo Revenge, customers can take control of these situations. And those robocalls, you can finally...
Before Peter Jackson brought Middle-earth to life, the look of The Lord of the Rings was made by artists, animators, and few created visions so iconic and so loosely related to the actual books as Barbara Remington, the well-loved illustrator who has passed away at age 90. She is the illustrator who did paperback cover art for Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings books as well as The Hobbit. She died in late January due to breast cancer at age 90.
And we find out like halfway into February?
It's so weird how this keeps happening. Remington created hand-drawn illustrations for the paperback version of Tolkien's classics published by Ballantine Books. She did so, however, without actually having ever read the books. And as the New York Times recounts...
Draw me a dragon.
Quoting old interviews with the artist, Tolkien was not a big fan of them, requesting certain elements removed, like a lion that was featured on one of the covers.
Aslan doesn't live in Middle-earth.
They're equal parts whimsical and full of dread, not capturing very much at all about what Middle-earth must have actually looked like, but digging heavy into how the whole thing felt... Even if it is a complete accident, the slow change in color scheme from the first book to the third, the animal motifs that grow more dreadful, the swirling fire in the skies, feels like Middle-earth coming to an end, even if it doesn't look anything like it.
Like a Roger Corman flick.
Remington went on to do illustrations for other books, but this work, as one of the first people to give Tolkien's works art that suited them, is what stands out as her legacy, though I always did like the cover of The Worm of Ouroboros. Either way, please rest well. Because that art will live so many ways forever. GRD is licensed with the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Non-Derivative Works United States 3.0 license. Come check us out on Facebook and on Twitter and stop by the website at geekradiodaily.com. YouTube.com. No one's really said whether they think I'm right or wrong in my Learn Institute about Ruth. You gotta let me know. I've put it out there. I'm willing to admit I'm wrong if I am. But I need you to jump on the bandwagon now. Here's
right,
your chance.
We're going to know soon.
And drop us a note, won't you please? It's podcast at geekradiodaily.com. You can send it here. I mean, you don't have to leave, you know, quotes or comments on YouTube, whatever. I don't care. Whatever. Drop us a voicemail. That's an even better way to do it. Just dial the magic number of
510-GRD-CRED.
And we'll see you when we do.
That was lame.
Good night, suckers.
Scat. Skedaddle. Adios. Arrivederci. Ciao. Aloha. Fuck off.
My real passion is my hobby.
Really? What's that?
I work with retards.
Isn't that a little politically, incorrect?
Well, the hell with that. No one's gonna tell me who I can and can't work with, right?
No, I mean...
We got this one kid, Mongo. He's got a forehead like a drive-in movie theater, but he's a good shit, so we don't bust his chops too much. So one day, Mongo gets out of his cage.
But they keep him in a cage?
Well, it's just an enclosure.
No, but they keep him confined.
Right, yeah.
That's bullshit.
Well, that's what I said. So I went out and I got him a leash.
A leash?
Yeah, one of those ones you can hook onto the clothesline, and he can run back and forth, and there's plenty of room for him to dig and play. That kid is really, he's really blossomed, you know? Now I can take him to movies, baseball games, fun stuff. Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Oh, yeah, it's cool for them, but for me, it's much more than that. For me, it's heaven, you know? Those goofy bastards are just about the best thing I've got going in this crazy world.